You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Sorry, you know, sometimes I remember the sins of the past where I would sit in that producer's chair and absolutely clip things that were said.
Mm-hmm. It's the best part of the job. It's the best part of the job.
I now forget that my job is to talk into these microphones.
And people will then clip what you say.
And I absolutely say things that will get clipped, including, but not limited to, the story. That. But this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, here with you for the rest of the week. Hanging around, hanging about.
For the next few weeks.
Next couple weeks, actually. So, Sal, enjoy your well-earned.
Sal's in Italy.
Well-deserved time away.
I don't think he's in Italy yet, though. That's the key.
He might be in the air.
Yeah, it might be in the air. Those flights are long.
Flights are super long.
Those flights are long.
Again, well-deserved. Mm-hmm. Take your time. Kick your feet back. Or don't. Go rushing around Italy if that's what you want to do. If that's more your style.
I mean, to be fair, that's something I want to do at some point in my life. I have a dream of backpacking Italy.
That's the thing. I don't know if I could ever do that sort of thing because my idea of vacation is not going a bunch of places.
Okay. No, I think that I can understand that.
My idea of vacation is literally kick back. A destination vacation is not a good idea for me
mm-hmm.
because then you have to go and see things. I'm more of the let's just enjoy it.
Go to a beach kind of deal.
Yeah, I don't like sand.
Wow.
It's coarse and gets everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So wait, where are you going then to relax? Like you just like a lake house kind of deal?
Yes.
Okay.
All lake right. house That's is a good always idea an too. Ideal relaxing vacation style sort of thing. We have a couple friends that try mm-hmm. to do that sort of thing every year.
Oh yeah.
Our
schedules just don't allow for that anymore.
Yeah, you and I can't go anymore.
We don't do that anymore. Our schedules do not allow
also,
for it.
Also, love him, but he keeps scheduling it during the 11 day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like well,
I mean, like your schedules just do
I
not allow
definitely
for
definitely cannot go.
But yeah, Lake House is pretty good, but I have an absolute dream. Not just of Italy, but like traveling like England as well and going to Scotland and then Ireland and doing the British
you
Isles.
You and your family, though, you're Disney.
We're the Disney family.
You're Disney aficionados, I think is the right word to
it's
use.
It's probably
here.
A right word to use, yes.
You should do exotic Disneys.
I have actually wanted to go to Tokyo for that. I think there's Disney Paris, too. I have no real desire to do that one. Like if I'm going to go to France, I want to just like go to Paris.
If there is a place I would want to go just to see what it's like, Japan is absolutely it.
Japan's up there. I mean, I really want to go to Singapore. Singapore is a place that I would love to go to because they've got a bunch of food markets that are very cheap food, but you get like Michelin star quality. Singapore.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Singapore, yeah.
I think Singapore.
So. Singapore.
Yeah. I got real confused
Singapore?
There for a second. Yeah.
S-I-N-G.
I always thought the G was silent.
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
What?
I thought the G was silent, honestly.
You gave me like some sort of Mandela effect where yeah. I'm like, wait, have I been saying it wrong this whole
time?
That's
exciting.
Because you're more cultured than I am?
I love that kind of power.
But
I love that kind of power.
But now I've got Josh backing me up on that one. Yeah.
It's like, Singapore.
Yeah, Singapore. Yeah. I do want to go there.
So you're weird.
Where else?
Legoland, Denmark would be on my bucket list.
Legoland, Denmark.
That's where Legos were invented in Denmark.
No, I just love
were they really?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I also just love that it's going to Denmark, baby.
For Legoland.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
What else do you know Denmark for?
Fjords.
Sure.
It's about it.
Vikings?
Vikings. It's about it. Yeah.
A really cool flag.
Yeah. It's kind of about it, actually. That's about it for me. Oh, and Germany. I definitely want to go to Germany. Oktoberfest, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Low-key, decent games every now and then on the world stage in hockey.
Right. Right.
Am I stretching it with Denmark at this point? Yes, but I'm going to give them
some
love. That is
a big stretch.
Yeah. Italy is definitely up there first for me.
I said occasionally.
Only occasionally.
Sometimes the Danes play some good hockey, okay?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Italy, though, is up there for me. All the Renaissance cities, absolutely.
I know you're not talking, but shut up, Josh.
803-0550, the number to call for today will be on from 10 to 12. Definitely jumping into some football, though. We are at the point now. We're getting ready for training camps. They're starting in a few weeks. We're getting some of those going, I think, next week with the Chargers and the Lions playing in the Hall of Fame game because they obviously get there earlier. And
ooh,
also,
wait
Derek.
A minute. Now I need to know something.
Also, though, we do have quarterback season two going on. And if you have Netflix, I imagine if you're a sports fan, you're watching it and you're enjoying it. I definitely have been. And I've mentioned a lot with these sports documentaries. Number one, I'm a junkie for it. I will absolutely watch every one of them. Even if it's teams or players I don't particularly like, I typically end up finding myself to them. I never did with the Brady stuff, but I do typically find myself to them. But I will tell you, this season of quarterback has me locked in for the three storylines. It's Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, and Joe Burrow. And I think Netflix kind of stumbled their way into perfection with it.
Right.
Because of the three seasons and how they went. Goff with the Lions, he's really kind of found his stride there. He's been there now. This was his fourth year there. They found this stride there, but he still has some animosity towards the Rams. Kirk Cousins and everything that went on with him this year, the injury, him signing a big deal, but them still drafting Michael Penix. And then Burrow, arguably putting up MVP numbers this year and being on a 9-8 football team that didn't make the playoffs.
But also, the part of that I'm truly interested in is – based on the fact that, like, how those seasons went for each of those players. Like, you look at the Lions, for example. They were seen as clear-cut number one seed favorites. They had to fight with Minnesota all year to get that. But they also then go through almost every healthy starter on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain that is going to have to be pretty much disclosed within that season. Burrow, of course, with the defense that the Bengals had, and he would have been better served off with the Lions' injured group based on how their production was. And then Cousins, of course. Like, you're looking at a player who he signs a big deal with all the guaranteed money again. Good for you, Kirko. Coming off of an Achilles tear. And then losing the job.
And I'm not far enough into the series. I've only watched two episodes. I've heard what's coming up in that when Penix is getting ready to essentially take over the job. I don't know for sure because I haven't seen it yet, but I've been seeing a lot of people mentioning that Kirk kind of lies about the injury and how bad it actually was, and that the Falcons sort of had buyer's remorse kind of right away with him. And it's, he mentions Drew Brees' book where he never wanted to see his backup take the field, even if he wasn't a threat, this whole thing. It's just... It's been an interesting watch. One, I don't think Josh Allen would be particularly interesting in. I know his name was floated around outside of him winning the MVP. I don't really think he'd say anything particularly interesting compared to these guys.
Right.
But, like, the Cousins stuff is super fun because he is just kind of angry, but, like, on a simmering level the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He's not playing well. He's trying to learn a new offense with a bunch of new players.
He's fighting through an injury.
They did take Michael Penix. I did see the clip where he acknowledges that if he had known that the Falcons were going to do that, he would have just stayed in Minnesota. He loved it there. He would have just signed the one-year deal. McCarthy, Penix, it's the same situation. Maybe he starts for the 1 year, and ultimately, he would have McCarthy in an injury that would have taken him out for the year.
Right.
And then he moves on. But it's just there is sort of like this like bitterness like under the surface for him, and I'm like, he's going to snap. And I'm excited to see it happen.
He's
say this both lovingly, but also somewhat of an insult. He's very corny.
Yes.
That's just who Kirk Cousins is. But, like, that's who he is. But he's kind of a fun watch. I know Bulldog has mentioned a lot that in the first season. He mentioned how he never really cared for Kirk Cousins. But after the first season, he really came away liking him. I'm kind of there with Jared Goff. I've slowly been, starting to like Goff more.
Which is hilarious, knowing you as a friend. There goes my phone.
Did you break it?
We'll see. But because I'm a psychopath and I don't have a case.
Mm-hmm.
What? Well, pin in that. Knowing you as a friend, before you even started working here, one of my first core memories hanging out with you is how upset you were at Jared Goff in that Rams-Patriots Super Bowl.
He was awful.
You were screaming at Jared Goff to just scramble for any sort of first down.
I also had a few adult beverages in me, but yeah.
Yes. You were being
do anything, man.
You were being silly about the screaming about it. I don't want everyone to be like, oh, God, this guy's unhinged. But I'll let you decide how that narrative comes out. But you are just like jokingly screaming, Jared, be an athlete for the love of everything. And knowing that you have shifted the way that you have towards Jared Goff It's almost poetry.
I think part of it, though, has come in from what they've also mentioned in the documentary, and Jared mentioned in the documentary. It was his trade from the Rams. At the time, I totally got why the Rams did it. Made sense. Loved Stafford. It was cool. But now 4 years on, it's like, I mean, yeah, but the Lions won in this too. They got a good quarterback. They got a ton of picks that they were able to use to build out the team. Now they're one of the most loaded rosters in football.
And Goff found his form again.
Goff has found his form. You know, him and his, I believe it's now wife, talking about like fans chanting Jared Goff. Like just, that's like a chant now. It's not particularly for him or specifically for him. It's just like a chant now.
Yep.
That like the fans use. Like it's just kind of cool. And but like also like he's also super bitter still.
Good.
4 years on, like that man still hates the Rams. And now for me personally, because I always wonder about these athletes, how many times do they really have that hate in their heart for like a rivalry? Or because we see it a lot, you know, in the modern NBA, but also in the modern NFL, a lot of guys, like, it's more of a brotherhood. It's that kind of, it's that fraternity that they're all in. And you wonder how much hate's there. Like, I loved when the Rams and the Lions have met these last few times because, you know, we've built up the rivalry. But now knowing in my head that Goff almost definitely really wanted to beat them just made it so much better. And there is still some animosity. There's awesome. And then Joe Burrow, who was the quarterback I was most interested in seeing with this because of how the season went.
Yep.
And we'll talk much more on the Bengals and the AFC as a whole with this, is because about midway through episode 2 last night, I'm watching it, I had this kind of realization that, number one, I really like Joe Burrow, the quarterback. I've known that forever. I mean, 2019 LSU, outside of any Texas season, is my favorite college football team of all time. They were just so much fun. They scored like the wind. It was historic. It kind of came a little bit out of nowhere, but they were so dominant. You almost wondered how they were kind of such a good secret for so long. But also, I kind of came to this realization, as much as I like Burrow and Chase and how much they score, they just do not threaten me at all anymore.
And it's weird because if you were to ask who is – because we asked the question a little differently on Twitter. But if you ask this question of who's the threat to the Bills that isn't KC or Baltimore? Or who are you more afraid of that isn't the Chiefs and the Ravens? That answer's typically been in years past since
– almost unanimously.
And if someone still says it now, I'm here to tell you that's not supposed to be the case. But there are people that are still afraid of the Bills tangling with the Bengals. Because Cincy has had their number with this iteration of the Buffalo Bills. And yet, the Bengals have gone in a direction so negative. Like, yeah, you could be scared of Joe Burrow. But you know what the Bengals don't have? That defense that humbled you in the playoffs years ago. They don't have that anymore. Most of those players are gone. And one of the holdovers is so mad at you, is so mad at their own team that they're not in any way good faith negotiating with him.
Yeah, that's the Trey Hendrickson situation still going on. He's kind of their only... elite player on defense.
He's also like the last holdover from that defense that put the Bills down in the divisional round.
And that year, by the way, 2022, when they do beat the Bills, points against their defense was ranked 6th in the NFL.
Yeah, they were one of the best defenses in the league that year. And it showed. Like, they were one of the top teams in the league, and that's where the Bills falls in that divisional round when they do look emotionally drained.
That's probably the team of the Bengals that probably should have won the Super Bowl.
Correct.
Because their offense has been great kind of this whole run, but the defense has gone back and forth. Even in 21, they were in the middle of the pack in the teens in terms of points against. 22, they've got a top 10 offense, a top 10 defense. They're 12-4. They make it to the AFC Championship game. They just lose to the Chiefs. But that's probably the team that should win it. And since then, they haven't made the playoffs. That's their last playoff game. 23. Their defense goes from points against, obviously in the top 10, to 21st in 23. They go 9-8.
And then last year, they somehow managed to make that worse.
25th in the league. And they go 9-8 again. They don't make the playoffs again. And so that's really my big thing is the first two episodes are actually like very much highlighting the early and very bad struggles of the Bengals when they started 0-3. And they're just not able to get anything going. And I know the clip has been going around a lot. That's a bit later when they beat the Tennessee Titans. But Burrow, you can already see like that is simmering, that he is getting front. Like, the standard is simply not high enough. And he has done beautifully in front of the media. He never bashes the organization, but he mentions he wants these guys back.
Right.
He always has. But I do wonder how much more the Bengals are going to be able to keep that guy from snapping. He made the Super Bowl in his second year starting.
Yes.
And now is basically being told by the organization, well, we don't do things like everyone else here.
And frustratingly so.
Frustratingly so. And it has now gotten to the point for me. They have not made the playoffs in 2 years. And with for me with that, that reminds me of like the peak New Orleans Saints years with Drew Brees after winning the Super Bowl in 2009. Where would they have like 3-4 years running where they'd be a great offense. But they'd be 7-9 because their defense was horrendous. You know, Brees is putting up 5,000-yard passing seasons, record-breaking years, and they go like 8-8.
Yeah.
You know, that's
kind of what's happening here.
You know, funny enough, they wear the same number. But like that's sort of what it's reminding me of. And on that, it can change. Brees at the end of his career, or around the end of his career, has great Saints teams. Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, you know, Cam Jordan on the defense. Like, they really were able to kind of – Marshawn Lattimore. Like, they were really able to figure it out and get another talented group in there. But the Saints were also willing to play games with the cap, maybe to their own detriment later on, because now we're at a point where they are one of the worst situations of the last 25 years in football.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, expansion teams coming in. Because of their cap situation and where their quarterback room is and everything. But the Bengals, it's hard to see them ever operating like that, where they're willing to push the cap back, pay guys now to push the cap back. It's hard to ever see them like that. And so when I do look around the AFC, it's not the Bengals that I look at as a team that can enter that top tier in the AFC. They're not there anymore. The last 2 years, they have not made the playoffs. After 1 year of not making the playoffs, I get a little, ugh. But they lost Burrow. Burrow only played 10 games in 23. So there's an argument there where it's like, eh, but if they had Burrow, they're winning 12 games.
And was injured twice, not to mention. He started the season with a calf injury. Mm-hmm. It affected him. But also, since he gets out to their usual poor start, mm-hmm. do I think that that's solely because Burrow is injured? No. They've shown historically, even when healthy.
That seems to be their MO.
Under Zach Taylor, it's their thing. They do not start the season on time. Frustratingly so, depending on who you ask. Because even in the year that they make the Super Bowl, that's the one that they don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
They start the year 3-1 in their first four games.
Yeah, they actually kind of fall apart a little bit in that October-ish run.
Yeah.
Where they're 5-4 going into the bye, they've lost two straight. But yeah, like that's the 1 year with Burrow where they haven't had a real struggle to start the year.
Because the following season, when they end up with the sixth best defense, seventh best offense, they start 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
They do it again.
They lose to a bad Pittsburgh team and Dallas.
And like it's almost like, come on, you guys got to realize.
Funny enough, they're 5-4 going into their bye again.
Yeah. And then, of course, 23. You start 0-2, eventually 1-3.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, same story. So like they do this all the time. Instead, they started 0-3 and still end up at 1-3 through the first 4 weeks. But by their bye week last year, it was 4-7.
Mm-hmm.
Like dreadful stuff. Because you started 0-3, including against a Patriots team where everyone laughed you out the door. Because you lost to the Patriots in week one. That Patriots team. Not the one starting the promising Drake May.
That's week one, Jacoby Brissett. A new coach will ultimately be fired after 1 year in Gerard Mayo.
And your offense puts up 10 points. Against New England.
Yeah, they become a team. Burrow and Chase.
That's one of the few
Higgins.
Times that their defense actually has a good game. Granted,
yeah.
They still also allowed 16 points to that Patriots
squad. You know who it's against. I mean, you know, they have a good. They're not totally terrible, but it ends up being like their best performances are against not good defenses or not good offenses.
Here are the opponents where they've allowed 14 or less points. You ready? Actually, I'll go 17 or less. Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Giants, Patriots.
Yeah, everyone else that had, I mean, really even competent offenses. And the Patriots, you wonder what happens if that's like a week 13, 14 game when May's starting.
And they do go 4-1 ultimately, but one of those is a loss, and that's the Patriots.
Yeah. So they've quickly become a team. I Burrow, Chase, Higgins, Hendrickson, yes, they are still great players. The Bengals overall have absolutely moved away from the top tier of the AFC. I see them more as like a mid-team with a great quarterback. And they're mid-team because of said quarterback. The talent itself would not point to that. It is funny, though, knowing 2023 when Jake Browning has to play a lot, they do ultimately have the same record. 24, though, is the year where it kind of all bottoms out. The defense is terrible. Burrow's able to play the whole year, and it doesn't matter. And now this year, you mentioned the Trey Hendrickson stuff, but their defensive coordinator, who has kind of been like sort of a wizard for them, and Lou Amarillo, is gone. And now you have to wonder what is going to happen, because even your number one draft pick, who was supposed to help your defense,
is not signed.
And it seems like you've already started that on a bad run. So I think
also publicly feuding.
Yeah, I think most fans have acknowledged the Bengals have moved off. And so on that, 803-0550, the number to call. I think we all kind of agree. Buffalo, KC, Baltimore are the top tier of the AFC. Whether you think Kansas City lucked into wins last year, doesn't matter. They keep winning the Super Bowl. They keep going to the AFC Championship. Baltimore has gotten the one seed a few times here. They keep making the playoffs. They keep having great years. And then Buffalo, they beat Kansas City and Baltimore regularly. They're in AFC championship games. They're constantly dominating the AFCs. They have the MVP quarterback. Those are the three, I think, big ones of the AFC. I think all of us can agree on that. But this year, going into 2025, who, if anyone, in the AFC do you think can join them this year? Again, 803-0550, the number two call.
When we come back, though, too, we were promised something very incredible from producer Josh Schmidt. So we'll see what that is coming on back. No pressure, Josh. I'm sure you got this. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.
Meanwhile, vacation photos are popping up of Patrick Mahomes, and he's fat. I'm going to say it, and I'm going to tell you the truth. That's why you hit the play button. He's an embarrassment. You're a $500 million quarterback. You've made all these comments in the offseason that we're going to do our talking on the field. We got our butts kicked in the Super Bowl. We're coming back with a vengeance. Dude, you're fat. Your belly would be fat at my pool, hanging out with us, 60-year-olds, okay? My skin's flabbier than yours. I get it. Stop. Stop the fast food. Do a sit-up. Do something. Yeah, I'm sure he's worked out and strengthened his arm and he's done all kinds of different things, quarterback things, but there's no training to this man. I don't understand it. He's not a kid anymore.
That is a KC radio host, Kevin Keatsman. I mean, that was mean. That was aggressive. Especially because I mentioned the quarterback show.
We've
already seen how intensive Mahomes' workout program is. It's aggressive. That's what winning does to a man right there.
Ready?
It's apparently just nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing satisfies you.
You know what? Congratulations on being entirely miserable, Kevin Keatsman.
Also, is that like maybe like peak, like what would that have been, July 8th content?
That's not peak anything.
No, it's July 8th. We have nothing to talk about. I saw Pat Mahomes without a shirt, and he doesn't have a six-pack.
It's peak ignorance.
Upset.
That's what it is.
It's peak spoiled fandom.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what winning does to a man right there.
Okay, yeah. You feel that way? Okay, play a year without him and see how you feel.
Yeah.
Like, just don't let him play. If he's too fat, don't let him play.
Yeah.
Like, let's see what happens. Trade him away.
You know what? Well, Kevin Keatsman, this year, Patrick Mahomes is going to be away from the team doing crunches all year to satisfy your visible demands of what is in shape and not in shape for a professional athlete.
That's mean.
And you can deal with the Kansas City Chiefs without him. How's that? I'll take that trade. That's my proposal to you over there, you spoiled man, baby. You
want
to say insulting things? I could do it too.
We'll say, though, Mahomes, the last 2 years, production has not really been what it was.
True, but that doesn't mean it's
not
because he has a belly.
Entirely, but he hasn't played perfect, but yeah, it's not.
Just because he doesn't have a six-pack, that doesn't mean that's why he's struggling. Like, there are different reasons as to why he has struggled offensively, but man, to do that, like,
I thought he was a 4,000 yard passer last year. Like, if you asked me, I'd have said yes.
No.
Just under.
I would. That does not surprise me at all. He did not play well last year. And again, look, dude, like, congratulations on becoming the most entitled fan on the planet. You took Patriots fans from Boston back in the day where there were two-year-olds who knew what five championships were, and you made them seem humble.
I imagine, though, that went off very well in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine people took that in stride.
Oh, yeah.
He apparently continued to defend it.
Oh, good for him.
And was trying to, like,
good for him.
Compare it to Ben Roethlisberger.
Giddy up. Wait, absolutely.
Wait.
I love that. You know what? I knew the Ben Roethlisberger comparison would come up. That's fantastic.
Yeah, like
good
young quarterback, gets really good really fast, and then all of a sudden just kind of, like, slacks off.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But he was still one of the...
Yeah.
He was, but they really didn't do much in the playoffs after that. They were a great... Now I kind of want to almost know how it all went, because if he was like, no, like, this is good, we're entering a Super Bowl drought now, everybody. Like, this is what's going to happen. He's going to be Ben Roethlisberger. He'll put up his stats, but we're going to lose in the playoffs. Well, the Bills are going to start getting us.
To be fair to that guy.
No, don't be fair to that guy.
There's more of that clip where he's kind of putting this into the perspective of Brady's legacy.
Oh, and Brady, the workaholic. Uh-huh, and yeah.
Yep. And, oh, will Mahomes catch Brady if he keeps acting like this?
Problem is, Brady or Mahomes has entered that category where, yeah, like, people are only going to really compare you to other greats of different sports. Brady is an easy comparison for the NFL, but he'll start getting the Jordan comparisons and stuff like that of, like you need to be addicted to the grind. The problem is, we have already seen, like, Mahomes' workout program. It is pretty extensive. I also think he just has a quarterback body. They don't have to be the most physical, perfection, sculpture guys in the world. They don't have to be. But respect him for going to bat on that take. I think it's wrong.
I don't respect.
But way to fight it.
No,
way to fight the battle.
I don't respect it at all because of how he conducted himself on it, honestly. Like, if you're going to take that kind of cheap shot on a guy who is taking you to the Super Bowl, what, all but 2 years of his career?
Yeah, something like that.
Like, sorry, but you're kind of a joke. At that point,
battle it out.
Nope. Like, you don't. Ready? Not everybody deserves to have their opinion shared.
I'm not agreeing with him. But again, if he's pulling Ben Roethlisberger, he could be going like, look, we've already seen this guy didn't take care of his body; it fell apart.
You don't get to do that though when you've got a quarterback that's already been to six.
I'm not disagreeing, but you kind of also can. Roethlisberger went to a bunch early, won a ton early. Late in his career, he didn't. He didn't take care of himself. If he's going to be compared to Brady, I can understand that. I'm not agreeing that Mahomes is fat or anything that doesn't take care of himself. I'm not.
Well, I'm saying
also,
you can't.
We're not in the trenches in Kansas
but
City.
But you can't.
There could be rumblings that, hey, he's kind of taking it off a little bit. He doesn't have the same drive anymore. Maybe winning's taking it down. We're not in the trenches in Kansas City.
Nope. Spare me on that, dude. That's nuclear level. You're just trying to be a contrarian.
Oh, could be. Absolutely.
And good for you. You deserve to be laughed out the room.
I don't know if he's being laughed out the room.
Well, know how you sarcastically said Kansas City fans took that in stride?
I imagine they did. But also,
no, they probably didn't.
But Derek, we can't criticize anything Josh Allen does. Fans will always take the team first and the player first.
No, ready?
I'm saying that because even if it was true, everyone would defend the player immediately.
Yes, but the thing is that we're also not daring to say that Josh Allen is quote-unquote fat.
Well, that's one example.
That's someone who's just like, you're only happy when you're miserable, and I'm sorry that the quarterback that has brought you the most successful period of your franchise's history doesn't have a six-pack and you're just trying to be edgy. Who's a cool edgy boy?
I don't think that's it.
You're such an edgy boy.
I think he genuinely means it. If you're being compared to Brady and Michael Jordan, then you are going to have those work ethics. And if you're not, you're going to get judged.
If he genuinely
whether it's right or wrong.
It, yeah. Then if he genuinely believes it, I hope you get cooked forever.
He may or may not.
I want him to get cooked forever.
Because ultimately, I've mentioned it. Mahomes, his production has dipped pretty aggressively in the last 2 years.
I know, but it's still...
The team is winning, but what was last year? Last year's whole year was they suck and they keep winning.
But I'm not ready to go ahead and doubt him.
No, but here, even Warren Sharp, his quarterback list, he doesn't have Mahomes on the top tier list. His S-plus list is Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Jaden Daniels. Burrow and Mahomes are an A-plus, sure, but he's even acknowledged. Mahomes' production has gone down. I'm not saying it's because he's fat, but that's what people are looking at is... the talent is not going to be there pretty
then,
soon.
Then
Travis
say
Kelce's
like,
35. Chris Jones is in his 30s.
Then say it like that.
Well,
you don't have to.
You don't need to
be edgy about it.
I don't think he's being edgy. He looked at it and went, he looks fat. Is he actually working out? Are we going to have a problem here?
I don't know.
I think it's a fair wonder. They were destroyed in the Super Bowl, and they looked awful all year. I think it's a fair wonder of, like, are the best years behind us? Have we already been through the good old days?
If that's the case, then I can't wait for the salt mine. I can't wait for the day that you don't make the AFC Championship game.
Yeah,
because now those people out there literally don't know how to handle that right now.
It's going to happen. But again, he's being compared to Brady and to Michael Jordan, LeBron James, like these uber athletes who are addicted to the grind.
I'm glad that
if that is a genuine problem, which we don't know, we're not in the trenches in Kansas City. I can understand the fear.
I'm glad for one moment that the Kansas City Chiefs have broken football discourse. That's the first time I'm happy about it.
Now they've broken it a few times.
They've broken it a lot of times. This is the first time I'm happy about it. Because, dear God, if they don't make the AFC Championship game, the infighting will be hilarious.
It'll be infighting, because it's going to happen eventually.
Because they won't make the championship game. Are you kidding me? Count your stars that you already got this many.
I can understand it. You are one of the greatest dynasties in NFL history. You'd like that to keep going. I mean, we're all there. Like, as much as Bills fans will say, I just want one. No, you don't. If you win one, you're going to want another. You're going to want another. And you're going to want to eventually get documentaries.
It's the lie we all tell ourselves.
Yeah, you're going to want documentaries made on your team. Like, the one championship can be forgotten.
The saying, one before I die.
Yeah.
While it does have something to it, once you feel that success. Yeah, it's a fallacy that we all tell ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
I just want one. No. It's like the campaign slogan of a certain potato chip. Bet you can't just have one.
Right.
And they're right. At least I know from the chip company that I can't just have one. I want more. Like, that's something that I can go ahead and personally relate to. From potato chips to championships. I want more than one. Of course. But oh my God. Now, I need it more than air in my lungs. That the Bills beat the Chiefs in the freaking fracking playoffs.
I just wanted to
break their brains one time. If this is happening because they lost a Super Bowl after already being there 6 times in 8 years?
Yeah, the expectations are higher.
That's what I'm saying. Break them. Shatter them.
You're having this war with fans. Their expectations are higher.
No, I know.
Dallas Cowboys fans' expectations, to a detriment to them, are higher because they're one of the best dynasties ever. Pittsburgh fans, the same thing.
But ready?
Those are expectations that are built off of great teams.
They don't want the world to burn.
I
need Kansas City to be shattered. I need it shattered.
Look,
I want to put them together like a jigsaw puzzle, and it takes me 8 months.
I want to beat them and win a Super Bowl, but I would be them. If the Bills win one Super Bowl, they better not rest on their laurels.
Oh, I don't care about that part. We'll deal with that in the future. I'm just talking about the fact that I need to see Kansas City lose in the playoffs before the AFC Championship game now.
Well, it's going to happen. It will eventually happen. They're not going to be perfect the entire time. Brady went through 10 years of not winning a Super Bowl. He made them, but 10 years of not going or winning a Super Bowl. It's going to happen. But I'm not against a fan base or an organization raising the expectations and keeping them there forever.
I am against someone being edgy about it, though.
You're saying edgy. He is sitting there going, dude, you are compared to the best athletes in the world and you don't look like them. Maybe that's a bit much of a take. He maybe doesn't say it perfectly, but I can understand the sentiment of, dude, we need you to be better. We were not good the last 2 years. We made the Super Bowl. But the last 2 years, your production sucked. You're not on pace to blow out now every offensive record ever. That was your whole thing. He didn't throw for 4,000 yards the first time in his career last year. Xavier Worthy was open a ton deep, couldn't hit him to save his life.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand where there's some anger because you are seeing Baltimore is coming. Allen and the Bills keep beating you in the regular season. They just happen to not do it in the playoffs. That will eventually come. And then what happens if Liam Cohen hits in Jacksonville, or The AFC West finally figured it out. Denver looks good. And I'd argue they're the team that I'm looking to maybe break into that elite tier. Their defense was awesome last year. And they added Jahdae Barron, who's one of the best corners in college last year. The Chargers have year two of Harbaugh. And that's always going to be interesting to see if he's going to really take that team to the next stop. He's done it everywhere he's gone. And then the Raiders are the Raiders. It's not going to be a perfect division. But they're probably looking around going, this is the worst it's been. And are they going to be able to get out of it? Are they always going to be able to sneak out of it and still win their division? I don't know. So I can understand a little bit of fear going into this.
No. For me, this is a you're being pretentious because football is still, at the end of the day, a team game. And yes, having a great quarterback is going to be one of the biggest advantages that you have. But if the argument is that maybe Patrick Mahomes isn't a top five quarterback right now, and even that might be rich to say, then what are you doing here? I'm glad that it's breaking Kansas City for once because of the amount of fan bases that they have shattered already en route to their greatness, the discourse that has happened in football circles, and what has happened to it. We are looking at one of the best Bills teams that we've seen growing up. And they can't even sniff it because of this team. I'm glad you're miserable for once. Because you hand it out every year to everybody else. Cry some more.
I
don't feel bad at all.
I'm not saying I feel
no,
bad.
No, but like, and also, you're wrong. Like, not you, but like the guy. Like, you're wrong, Kevin. Like, try doing one of his workouts. Go ahead. Sorry, there's not enough ab in your workout there.
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Big news in Formula One today, if you're a fan of that. The movie just came out. We just had the British Grand Prix. That was a lot of fun. Changes, though, at Red Bull, which is obviously the team with Max Verstappen, a four-time world champion. They are making a change at the top as Christian Horner, and this is official from the team. It was reported earlier this morning. Now it's been made official the last few hours. Their team principal and CEO, Christian Horner, is out after 20 years with the team. And in those 20 years, 405 races, 124 race wins, 8 drivers' titles, and 6 constructors' titles. Also, of course, the last few years, a dominant team in Formula One with Verstappen. I've mentioned 4 world championships. Sebastian Vettel were the other two there, I think, with Horner. Also had some personal stuff come out that wasn't great with him last year, and that was a lot going on there. And now also, I do wonder, and Derek, this kind of goes to that conversation we just had about keeping the standard high and, mm-hmm. and such. Red Bull's having a bad time right now, even with Verstappen. They're able to, you know, get poles. He's, I think, won a race this year, but it has not been as pretty. And there's also been rumblings he might leave Red Bull to go to Mercedes. So I think this might either be the move that, no, I think it means two things. I think both of them go towards Verstappen. Either one, we're going to get a report relatively soon that he's going to Mercedes, Verstappen,
mm-hmm.
or they got Horner out to keep Verstappen at Red Bull. Don't know where that's going to go. I know there's been a lot of rumblings on it, but they're trying to keep the standard high. They're trying to keep their guy locked in, and in the last 2 years have been really frustrating. He won the world championship last year. They did not win the constructors. McLaren did. And now this year, Verstappen's had brilliant moments, but it has been all Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris for McLaren pretty much untouched outside of like the first few races where we're still trying to kind of figure out the order. We'll see where that goes, but it is a huge shakeup in Formula One. Like, legitimately, if you got into Formula One after the movie came out, boy, you've had a run here. You've had a run here. It has been a wild like week and a half because the British Grand Prix is always a lot of fun at Silverstone. A guy named Nico Hülkenberg, who's been driving forever, got his first podium at like 37. That was huge. And then this news. So, I mean, it's not always this exciting. It actually very rarely is. It usually
it's not
is just,
always this exciting.
It's usually a kind of a long grind of like, I want to see how this ends.
I don't know if that's the selling point they're trying to make it to be either.
I mean, my selling point was Verstappen's first championship where it came down literally to the last race. between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen, and Verstappen passes him. It's very controversial. Mm-hmm. He gets his first title. That was my introduction to it. And then the next few seasons were, oh, Verstappen's actually just going God mode and just annihilating the field. No one's close to him. And so that's what I mean. Like, it's not always as exciting. It's actually oftentimes can be very boring and kind of very just, okay, if he doesn't crash, he's going to win, right? Like, right. As long as like a mechanical thing doesn't happen, he'll be fine. This year's been a little interesting with McLaren, but now you've got stuff like this and even maybe Verstappen going to a place like Mercedes. And I'll tell you right now, he is a talent because, as I mentioned, I got in late. I got in when he first started winning. He's somebody I always kind of was like, that's the car. It's a rocket ship. Like, he's good, maybe
it's a
great.
Rocket ship.
But, like, let's not, like, put him on, like, the all-time greats. These last 2 years, watching him try to, like, just will everything out of, we're not great cars. Good cars, not great. I've absolutely just, like, my appreciation of his driving has gone up. He's a little bit dry when he talks to the media. He's not a fun personality. But my respect for him as a driver has gone up exponentially the last, like, year and a half, 2 years. He's been an all-world talent, really, since he entered Formula One at 17. And I think he's, like, 26, 27 now. He's been in the sport a long time.
Good Lord.
But he was, like, the McDavid and Crosby prospect of Formula One, and he has delivered almost immediately.
Yeah.
And then once he won championships, it was just the floodgates opened, and it was like, okay, rack them up.
Just rack them up.
Rack them up.
Everyone was right.
Yep, 803-0550, the number two call. We'll get to your thoughts on who you think could enter that top tier in the AFC. We've got some responses. Also taking your calls, 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I would have to say Josh Allen, just because I think we've seen him perform better in playoff games against the Chiefs than we've seen Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. You go back to that AFC Championship game a couple of seasons ago that was in Baltimore. The Ravens came in rolling. It was their year. They were all set to do it. And they played basically their worst game of the year that day against the Chiefs. Last year in Buffalo, Lamar Jackson goes in there with a team that really hadn't been turning the ball over, and they commit several key turnovers in a loss to Buffalo in the divisional round. Whereas while Josh Allen hasn't gotten over the hump, we've seen him play some masterful games against the Chiefs and in playoff games.
ESPN's Dan Graziano talking there. Who will beat Mahomes first in the playoffs? Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen? He goes with Josh Allen there. I think that's a completely reasonable take there, especially his reasoning. Lamar and Baltimore have really stunk up the place at times when they play in the playoffs.
And even when they threatened to come back against Buffalo in the divisional round, why did they have to come back?
Yep, it's early turnovers. It's you put yourself in a hole again. Here we go. Where with Allen, and to a certain extent, most of the Bills, it has been more, they've played really well. You can argue coaching has kind of hurt them a lot. Last year, you know, Kincaid makes the catch. The defense, if it's better
right.
talent-wise. But Allen has not really been the problem in most of their playoff losses. Cincinnati at home, the offense was overall pretty.
Everyone was bad that
yeah,
day.
Yeah, offense was overall pretty bad.
Which includes Allen. But
yeah.
Like, everyone was bad that day.
But for the most part, Allen has been dynamite in the playoffs. He's been one of the better playoff performers at any position in football. He's been great. And so on that, we do have a topic of discussion today, 803-0550, the number two call. Buffalo, KC, Baltimore, they are considered the top tier of the AFC. It's why you hear Graziano talking about who's going to beat Mahomes first. It's two quarterbacks they mentioned there, Allen or Lamar. But for this year, who, if anyone, do you think could join that trio at the top of the AFC this year? We've got some responses on Twitter, so we'll get to some of those. Dave goes, the answer that I think I would go to, and that is Denver. You look at Denver last year, Derek, and they were a very, very good defensive football team, and they were starting a rookie quarterback, and they still ultimately, in terms of points scored, were 10th in the NFL.
Right.
Their defense, in terms of points against, third. And I mentioned, you know, they then add a guy like Ajaide Barron, and well, the last time you saw their defense was getting curb stomped by the Bills 31-7. It's their first playoff game. You know, Sean Payton's still kind of getting that team going. I think this year's the year where you start looking at them and go, okay, that's interesting. They went 10-7 last year. Their expected win-loss record, though, was 11-5. So even then, you know, they've kind of got that room to grow even last year. And I think this year, I like Bo Nix a lot last year, and that hurts me to say because I was not a Bo Nix guy when he was coming out of Oregon, but he looked very good.
He started rough.
Yes, and then really picked it up. That's where I think Jaden Daniels beat him out for Rookie of the Year, realistically, was that Daniels, from week three on, was awesome and had iconic moments for Washington and then even the NFL season itself, where Nix was kind of just – he got reliable. He got stable. And he had good games, but I'd even argue like his best game of the year was against a bunch of Chiefs backups where he was like 15 for 15 at one point to start the game. Like he was on fire and it was against their backups. But Denver is the team this year. I'll give Sean Payton a lot of crap at times, but I think now that he's got his group in there, you're going to start seeing the Sean Payton from the Saints years, the end of the Saints years even. And that could hurt him in the playoffs, don't get me wrong. But I think that could also lead them to beating the Chiefs for the division if things don't go well for the Chiefs. If they continue to really struggle, Denver, I think, is the team they're looking at most. And I think it's mainly that defense.
And I will – the only counter argument that I have with the Chiefs is how good is Bo Nix really?
Right. Now, well, because we already saw a sophomore slump. C.J. Stroud, great rookie year. Sophomore year, not so much.
And looking at last year, who did you – beat that was noteworthy. Mm-hmm. Why are your numbers so good?
And we talked about that a lot going into that Bills playoff game.
They beat Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And then their other wins were as follows: Jets, Raiders, Saints, Panthers, Falcons, Raiders, Browns, Colts, backup Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to be technical, they beat a team with a winning record.
Right.
In that is not Tampa Bay. But that Kansas City team was not trying at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to even put that. Because we talked about that last week with the Chiefs.
If I have to get technical.
The Bills were the only team to outright beat them.
Yeah. If I have to get technical, they did beat two teams with winning records in that moment.
Now, ultimately, where this maybe hurt the Texans this year or this past year won't hurt the Broncos. The Texans got a first-place schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The Broncos finished third in the AFC West last year.
So their schedule does not get much harder.
Listen how they open up the season. Tennessee at home, rookie quarterback, making his first start in Cam Ward.
Mm-hmm.
At the Colts, I literally don't care if it's Daniel Jones or Anthony Richardson. They are probably getting through that game. At the Chargers, Bengals, at Eagles, at Jets, Giants, Cowboys, at the Texans, Raiders, Chiefs, and then their bye week in week 12.
You know what's kind of hilarious?
Hmm.
I looked at the schedule and kind of picked it apart.
Mm-hmm.
They played a second-place schedule.
Are they playing a second-place schedule?
Last year they played a second-place schedule.
Last year, yes.
That says more about what the Chargers and Raiders were that year
mm-hmm.
prior before, more than it does about Denver.
Also one of those things, too, where the schedule always looks a little bit more daunting at times before the season starts, or it always looks either daunting or not before the season starts, and it'll usually level out somewhere.
And even then, knowing the teams that were going in, it didn't really look all that daunting.
No, but it ultimately was a second-place schedule. But this year, I mean, like right there. And at that week three game, 4-0-5 at the Chargers, I kind of like that.
It will talk.
That's going to be a big early game to see who's making that step forward.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's going to possibly help shift the it'll help set the tone, so to say, of where the West might shake out this year
mm-hmm.
and how it might end up being going forward. I don't necessarily know if I believe in Denver more than I would, for example, the Chargers. But I also don't trust the Chargers every couple of years to do the thing that they're supposed to do. L.A., by the way, you mentioned that week three. L.A. plays three straight West teams to open their year. So we will find out very quickly if the Chargers have the gas.
Yeah, they won't have to go out east. They won't have to have any of the weird kickoffs.
It's three divisional games right in a row.
Three divisional games to start?
Chiefs, Raiders, Broncos. Ugh. It's three divisional games right in a row.
I don't love that. I'd hate that as a Bills fan.
If you go 1-2, the tone has not been set proper, and you've been bodied around within your own division.
Yep.
If you somehow lose to the Raiders,
Oh, yeah. Then we're having conversations then we're about having the Chargers.
Very different conversations
Actually,
about the Chargers.
Realistically, we're not having any conversations probably about the Chargers then.
Yeah, you know, they start
they become a team that has to earn everyone's respect again
because
in
they chargered.
Like December. Yeah.
Because you chargered again.
And then we'll be having Bengals last year.
Yep.
Start 0-3. And for most of the season, up until they win five games to end the year, we're all sitting there going, don't talk. They're dead. I don't care about them. Move on. The whole thing. They win five to make it interesting.
And it turns into, what do you mean you're not dead?
Right. Now, with Denver, I mean, that's the thing. They should beat Tennessee and the Colts. They should, just flat out. They should go into that game against Chargers 2-0. You win that 3-0, the conversation about the Chargers, or about the Broncos, could end up being already that they've moved into the upper echelon of the AFC with Baltimore, with Kansas City, with Buffalo, because they would have beaten the Chargers. That's a divisional opponent. That's arguably the opponent they're most compared to in their division, even in the AFC in general, just who they're most compared to because they're right there with each other. You get one up on them, you start moving forward. But I think you're right because the point you brought up right at the start, how good is Bo Nix really?
And that's a question that has to get answered. How good is he really?
Mm-hmm.
And that's for all these year two quarterbacks. Like, Jaden Daniels already being thrust into, like, top five conversations. How good is he really?
I know. I'm so nervous because I like Daniels, but I'm like, we literally just saw Stroud have a regression in year two.
And that's the thing is, how good is a player
really?
But
we've also had guys pop off in year two. Lamar and Carson Wentz when he was getting big. Even Allen, to a certain extent. It's not the year three jump he had, but year two was a significant jump from one to two. There was no regression. It was all progression. It's not linear,
right.
But it doesn't always mean guys are always going to have that bad jump back. But last year, he had a good season. He almost threw 600 passes, 66 completion percentage, just shy of 3,800 yards, 29 touchdowns, 12 picks. You know, his QB rating's 56.8, passer rating 93.3. He was so good last year. A lot of that also was he was 24 years old and started a ton in college. Which is a conversation we've had a little bit, and I know I kind of want to have that conversation a little bit later in the week as well when it comes to goalies. But like Nix has started so much, so like a part of me also looks at him and goes, he's already got his process that he does down.
But if he's not,
and he started 17 games for them. He started a playoff game. Like there is something to he's now been there and done this. He's gonna be 25 in year two,
and that's the thing. If he has already gotten, like if he's pretty much like his processes are his processes, is he who he is already? And that's not good enough.
That's not good enough.
That's a high floor, low ceiling type quarterback, mm-hmm. and you are not going to threaten to become on the next echelon within the conference if you have a high floor, low ceiling type.
Right. You look at a guy like a Mac Jones. Didn't have totally similar stats, but kind of did. 10-7, played all 17 games, 67.6 completion percentage, 3,800 yards passing, 22 yep. touchdowns, 13 picks. And his QB rating, I'm sorry, his passer rating, 92.5, QB rating, 56.9.
These numbers
actually
sound very similar.
Very similar. The touchdowns were a little bit more, but we've already mentioned that too. The last game of the year for Nix, when he's playing the backups, he pops off.
Yeah,
he has a wonderful game.
He has a little bit of a statistical bump that probably is not even probably that is above average from what he was doing throughout the entire year.
Yeah, 26 for 29, 321 and four touchdowns.
More touchdowns than incompletions.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, it does look like one of these things of is he who he is? How good is he really? Mm-hmm. So Denver is a fascinating conversation to have because there is potential around the roster. But it ultimately ends up on the question of how good is Bo Nix really? And we do need to find that out. Everyone would love to find that out and have that answer to that question.
It's tough. I mentioned it before. I was not a big Bo Nix guy when he was coming out of Oregon. I hated him at Auburn. He was a better quarterback at Oregon, but I hated him at Auburn. It's also a bad system for him. Gus Malzahn should not lead anyone's quarterback room. But I think there is more to him. Like with Mac Jones coming out of Alabama was like an improved version of A.J. McCarron. Like he was exactly the quarterback Nick Saban had for a lot of those years. Not Tua and Jalen Hurts. Like it was Mac Jones. It was Greg McElroy. It was A.J. McCarron. Like those are very particular guys. And Jones, I think we all kind of saw, was drafted higher than he ever should have been. He did not have the elite trait anywhere that made you think he could pop off and get better. Bo Nix, I think, does. Bo has a good arm. He's a good athlete. And then he's now started multiple games. I think there is more for Nix, but that is going to be the conversation to have. I think he's in a good spot, though, with Sean Payton being his head coach, what he did with Drew Brees and everything like that. And also, he kind of seemingly like handpicked Bo Nix. of those rookies. He seemed to really like him. And I think that's also partially he was older. He's run near NFL systems for years now. He can come in and just run my system and be fine.
There is also
a
difference.
But man, there is. It's always uncomfortable with second-year quarterbacks because you brought up Jaden Daniels too. Are we really going to push him into MVP conversations already? Are we sure?
How good is – and that mm-hmm. with all second-year quarterbacks, how good are you really? And I do think, like, you're right. You don't want to bring Mac Jones into the Bo Nix conversation because there are differences about them already. You mentioned that there are elite traits that Nix has that Jones never did. And going into their draft days
mm-hmm. –
Jones was seen as high floor, low ceiling. Like, that's what he was called.
And, like, people, like, partially meant that as an insult, too.
Yes.
That's the worst part. It partially meant as an insult.
They were right. Bo Nix never had that said about him, though.
No, it's right.
Like, there is still some potential there. There is a higher ceiling than versus Mac Jones
really,
would ever have.
Really, it came down to how much is the Oregon offense actually setting you up for success? That was a thing with Marcus Mariota, too, when he was coming up all those years ago. Oregon always kind of has this feeling of, is that actually setting you up for success? Like, LSU has now entered that category of, they're setting you up for success.
Right.
Like, their quarterback this year, Garrett Nussmeier, is going to be high up there. Funny enough, his dad, I'm blanking on his name, but his dad is the offense coordinator for the Saints. That'll be a fun story to keep an eye on. But that's become a thing that there are certain places you feel comfortable drafting their quarterbacks because of how their offensive systems work. Same with Clemson with Cade Klubnik. Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence ran those systems really well at those schools. Klubnik is going to be kind of the same thing where, like, USC for a long time kind of had this stigma of you probably want to draft them. Michigan and Ohio State quarterbacks, you didn't. Like, they did not run pro systems. You did not like it.
So we talked about the Bengals in the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you and I are on the same page about them. Until they get their organization out of distress, I can't take them seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I know somebody tweeted in with the answer of the Bengals. But until they get that organization out of distress, based on their management style, the chaos that they've been mm-hmm. really causing upon themselves, I can't take Cincinnati seriously until they make the postseason again and have a defense that can be respected. But now come other teams we have to start asking about. What about last year's darling, Houston? Houston went through major regression for C.J. Stroud. I also think a lot of that had to do with that offensive line that they put together that they've all dismissed.
Yeah, it's still not a good O-line.
It's not a good O-line, but also the positive is it's not last year's O-line.
Right, that's fair.
The personnel that played last year will not play this year. That's a good thing. For better or for worse, it's still at least a good thing that that offensive line that we know is bad
mm-hmm.
is not going to be there. Good. Could the replacements be worse?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's the opposite of the devil you know, the devil you
mm-hmm,
don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because the devil you know is the offensive line is cheeks, and you need to move on from it.
Yeah, it's been bad for a
it's
while.
It's been bad. We need to fix this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who cares if the players that we got in are worse? Because then at minimum, we're doing the same thing that we'd have to do anyway, which is fix it.
Yeah.
But good for them for starting to do that. Even if it was like, oh, who did you even bring in to replace them? I don't care. They're not the names that were up there last year.
Mm-hmm.
But the Texans should still have some consideration because sometimes you also don't expect a team to take that rise, and that's when they do it.
It could also be a team like Jacksonville. New head coach. You add Travis Hunter in.
You find out this year if Trevor Lawrence has the goods.
That's the thing. We've seen there's been flashes with Lawrence of like, okay, I can see why you were considered a generational guy. I get it. And if Liam Cohen hits, and to be fair, what he did in Tampa, I mean, we're at a point now, Baker Mayfield is a good quarterback, if mm-hmm. not very good quarterback. I think that's almost inarguable. He threw 41 touchdowns last year. He's been awesome for Tampa. I think they're probably the favorite to win that division as well.
It is just 2 years ago that Jacksonville was expected to be that next team.
Exactly. It's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago. And then Houston took their place. I do want to consider Houston for this because C.J. Stroud, while he did take a step back, he is still very good.
Mm-hmm.
At minimum, and they do have some solid weapons to that core. With Nico Collins leading the way there, you lost Stephon Diggs due to that injury. You lose Tank Dell to another injury, and he will never be the same player again.
I just wonder if he's even going to play this year.
Yeah.
I think that's probably an outside shot.
And if he does, he'll never be the same player he was,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which is a shame because it's only 2 years in. Like, that's heartbreaking stuff.
He was such – he is – I'm not going to, you know, act like it's all over, but he is such a fun player, and it also felt like he was sort of opening the door
right.
for a lot of smaller receivers, but elite route runners and pop speed. To
technicians.
Like, yeah, to, like, get more of a bump here. And then now kind of like the worst case scenario, which is – and not, these injuries are not because he's a smaller guy, but you're going to see injuries to a guy that's 5'8 and
well,
go,
one,
well, yeah, if he was 6 foot, it'd be easier.
I'd say one of them was. Man sent out blocking.
Yeah, that's right. The first one.
The first
one. In his rookie year. That's right. The second one
second
more.
Second one's just terrible luck.
Yeah. No, that's right. The
first one.
Because that was the big thing is like, why are you sending out 5'8 Tank Dell to block?
Yes. Because the controversy was not about him. It was about the coach
deploying
him to do that. But Houston still needs to be considered. Jacksonville is a dark horse of a team that, like, 2 years ago, they were supposed to be that team, that ascending talent. And then the other team that is worthy of mentioning probably is the Chargers.
Yeah, we mentioned a lot of Denver there. But, right, if they win that Week 3 game.
But L.A., and this is – I don't have a better answer for this than it's a vibes thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't trust the Chargers as an organization to not go ahead every 2 or 3 years – punch themselves in the groin.
You have a lot of buildup and then absolutely fall flat.
After having all expectations on you. Mm-hmm. That's kind of their thing. And even when they moved to LA, it's still their thing.
Yeah, it never went away.
It never went away. The quarterbacks, the personnel, everything changed. But when the expectations are highest on them, or they are higher, the Chargers love to trip themselves at the top of the stairs.
I think there's also kind of a conversation, not just about the Chargers, but maybe it might be just like the overall Chargers thing. You know, Herbert 2-3 years ago was considered, I mean, he was on the Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, Burrow.
He was on a trajectory.
And he was that guy. And like everyone knew it. And sure, he was like Mr. What If, but most people acknowledge like, oh, man, if Miami took him, look where they'd be. Like
but
the whole thing.
But now he is if man.
Yeah, now it truly is. It's not just a meme. It's a genuine like, okay, guys, enough. Like we've now seen him with a good coach. We've seen him in multiple playoff games. Like this has been bad. He threw what, 3 picks all year last year?
Correct.
The regular season? He threw 4 in a playoff game against Houston. By the way, Houston winning 2 playoff games the last 2 years, almost entirely off of turnovers. They did the same thing to Joe Flacco 2 years ago.
That's right.
I mean, good for them. It's all been at home, but like two playoff games in a row. How does that happen where they're just like, we're going to take the hottest quarterback or one of the hottest quarterbacks not turning over the ball, and we're going to absolutely make a mincemeat?
They did also have a pretty good divisional game a couple of years back. Houston did.
Oh, yeah.
Last year was dreadful watching that game, but that had more to do with Kansas City than it did Houston. Because
their game against Baltimore 2 years ago. Yeah.
But Kansas City just sucked fun out of everybody last year.
It's kind of their thing.
But the Chargers are a team that, you know, you went 11-6. Like, you should get some mention here. You should get some shine. Zach, I want you to ask me about a different team in the AFC North. Just ask me the question.
No.
Say it. Just so I can say this answer.
Is there another team in the AFC North you think could do it?
What other team in the AFC North?
There we go. Okay. I got nervous there.
I wanted you to say, what about the Steelers? And then I was going to go, what about the Steelers?
I was getting very nervous. I'm like, please don't do this. Speaking of them, though, an 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join the conversation.
If you say the Steelers, you need a hug. You're wrong, but you need a hug.
You need a hug. again, topic of today, who, if anyone, do you think will join the trio of Baltimore, Kansas City, and Buffalo at the top of the AFC? We've got a few tweets in. Denver from Dave. DP had the Bengals saying if they finish strong, or they finished strong last season, if they get off to a good start, could be in the mix for the top AFC seed. And then John concurs with that. Watch out for a healthy Joe Burrow. The division will be a dogfight. It usually is. That is just usually very correct. The AFC North, no matter how bad some teams are, those games are close. I think Cincinnati could win the division. That's the funny thing.
Healthy Joe Burrow has not stopped them from starting
slow. That's the thing. It's just I think that's more of a Zach Taylor thing.
It's a Zach Taylor thing.
I think they just get off
ready.
They get off to slow starts. Partially though, Burrow's also missed a lot of training camp. And that could be something too of like they're not getting out of rhythm. You mentioned the New England game. They only scored 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a little bit of just, are they not in a rhythm yet because he hasn't had the reps in training camp? We don't know. We've kind of moved away from preseason games being the rep stuff. It is much more the practices.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where we've gotten, but you do wonder about that. I will say, though, man, if the AFC North is always interesting. After last year, I have a hard time seeing Cincinnati beating Baltimore for the division.
I don't trust a team whose locker room is that openly upset with management.
Yeah, where they're at currently, it's the vibes are not good there. I don't want to say the vibes are incredible in Baltimore either, but it's certainly not that.
The vibes are pretty good in Baltimore, though. That's mm-hmm. the thing. You can have a certain level of discontent from the locker room toward management and still succeed.
Mm-hmm.
What the Bengals have is almost open rebellion.
Yeah, that is a storyline I'm excited to see in training camp, is what does go on with Trey Hendrickson. Does he report?
And Shamar Stewart.
Shamar, oh man. Yeah, they've got a lot of
issues. If you have two holdouts, ask the Steelers what a promising, talented team can have happen to them when there's discord in the locker room.
Yeah. 803-0550. Again, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. We're on till 12 o'clock. Sabres Live will have you then. This is WGR.
The penalty train rolls on.
What the f*** are we doing, man? Wake the f*** up. F***ing mental mistakes all day.
Way to finish the day. That's a great drive and finish it. I know it's a frustrating,
embarrassing performance by us.
That's
embarrassing.
Listen, we'll address it, but at the same time, let's enjoy some wins
again. That. We suck today. Okay. That was embarrassing.
Okay.
We jumped offside 8 times.
I know that.
Okay. I understand that we won the game and we want to be happy that we won the game, but at the same time, when things aren't good enough, I'm not going to act like they were.
That is a clip from season 2 of Quarterback on Netflix. Joe Burrow, one of the quarterbacks being highlighted in this.
I thought that was an Xbox chat room.
It's so funny, Derek.
I got shocked with that one.
I'm not at that episode yet, and that's the thing with Netflix. They release everything in one go, so you kind of got to catch up. Like you get about 6 hours of breathing room before everyone spoils everything. I'm not at that point yet. Where I'm at in it, Burrow is handling everything way too well. Like, that is a big thing I've taken from this is I'm like, dude, you're 0-3. Like, you're making some comments, but you're handling it very well. Like, so I'm really interested. They win that game. It's a game against Tennessee.
Yep.
They win it, and they kind of win it by a lot. I think they win it by 12 points, 37-25, something like that. They win it pretty comfortably, and that man is upset. I mean, you heard all the beeps that Josh had to put in there. I also find it funny. Zach Taylor, who I have my issues with as a head coach. I think a lot of their issues kind of stem from him not being the best coach in the world. It is funny. He very much sounds like the stereotypical parent that's trying to calm his kid down.
Yes.
Because his kid's too intense during sports.
I will say.
It's so funny.
Actually, they only won by 10 against
Tennessee. They only won by 10, okay.
It was 37-27.
Okay.
That made them 6-8, by the way.
That was the part I was going to get to is this is the beginning of that losing streak that winning streak at the end of the year where one loss kills them. They're done.
So Burrow's thinking big picture.
Burrow's
we're
thinking
not
big
playing
picture.
Good enough. I don't care that we just won one game. We've got to win them all.
We need to keep going, and we need to not even keep going. We need to be better if we're going to have a shot at the playoffs. That's what this was during. So I do like that. Like, there's some context in it now.
Right.
This is late. This is do or literally die for your playoff hopes.
It's funny you say that. They were having those conversations in week 4 of like, but we've got nothing to lose. Let's go. It's funny how fast an NFL season can get behind you.
It's so different, though, when you say that. Because I will always go back to this, Zach. 2 years ago when the Buffalo Bills were in the Sunday night lineup for AFC East, and it was potentially or nothing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you and I thought it'll be so chaotic and awesome. The energy would be incredible if it's East or you miss the playoffs. And then we were staring down the barrel of the gun, and we did not like it.
No,
in live time.
It was awful.
In live time, we collapsed into, oh, my God, this is the worst thing that we could ever experience.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that, oh, we got nothing to lose, and then you are put up against having something to lose, you're a liar.
Yeah, it's not a fun place to be.
We have nothing to lose. And then it proves that, no, you do have something to lose. You're swearing enough to where a chat moderator and an Xbox server is going, this is too much.
This is even far for me.
Playing Halo with the buddies and like that's the chat server and they're going, that was extreme.
Yeah, it's just I'm excited. I've really enjoyed the documentary. I think also like I'm getting jazzed up for Hard Knocks with the Bills. Like I was already excited for it. I thought it really could happen when they changed the rules. Now that we're like 2-3 weeks away from camp starting, I'm real excited for it. There's a Wishbone documentary come out on like their SEC stories, those ESPN smaller 30 for 30s, specifically on the SEC. I'm excited for that, but like QB season 2, I think because they nailed the three quarterbacks, I think they stumbled into that, but ultimately it still worked. I think all three of them have good stories. Burrow again still is like the guy I'm watching. And so I probably actually finish the season tonight or at least get close to it. We'll see about that, but I've just enjoyed it. But it has also led me to thinking it's hard for me to really be that worried about the Bengals. I don't like their head coach. I really despise their defense, and the ownership continues to be arguably one of the biggest jokes in football. 803-0550, the number two call. We go to the phone lines. Rob is up first. Rob, how are we doing today?
Derek and Zach, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well, my friend.
What's good, Rob?
Doing well.
It's been a minute.
It's great to catch up with you guys, you know? And I was just telling Josh that, you know, I've been going through a lot of withdrawals, not being able to listen about football and everything. And today you guys are talking about football, and I'm like, oh, it's coming. 2 weeks or two and a half weeks, we'll be back in camp and everything. But everything that you guys have been talking about today, as far as like what teams are going to be good and tier one and finishing out, you know, the Bills this year, I feel that they're definitely, they have a lot of potential to be, you know, take that number one seed. And the thing is, if we can put up the numbers like we did offensively, and our offense is as strong as they were last year, it's the defense that I think is going to keep us in it even more, because we beefed up so much on the defense. And that's what I think I'm more excited about. It's the offense that I'm not concerned about. So if we can have that complementary football, I think we'll definitely be able to get in the number one seed. Of course, the Ravens are going to be there. Of course, Kansas City. But I don't think Kansas City is going to have to fight for it this year, because we saw them kind of go on a downfall, right? And now you got Denver who's coming up, like you guys were talking about. And as far as the Steelers, listen, even before they did sign Aaron Rodgers, I don't think they're going to win more than 7 games this year. I call 7. That's it. They're not going to do anything this year. As far as the Bengals, they're going to fight a little bit here and there. But I'm really excited about Buffalo. I'm a game at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, the one thing that does scare me is the fact that, you know, we're favored in every game this year. And it's just, that kind of scares me, because I just look at a game at a time when it comes to the Buffalo Bills. Once we get through it, we win, that's great. Nothing's promised. Keep doing what you guys are doing. It's always a great pleasure to catch up with you guys. Thank you very much.
Rob, good to hear from you again.
Always great to hear from you, Rob. I love his prediction on the Steelers.
Yes.
7 wins. Now, on that,
and I
had the thought the moment Rob said it, it's not because people hate Tomlin, but if we're getting towards the end of the year, and it's like, guys, they may not have a, it may be a losing record.
Yeah.
Is that something that like NFL fans start cheering about? Like, is that something where like people are locked in to see if the Steelers do get a losing record?
I don't think that enough people care about that mediocrity.
I agree. I think it's very much sicko kind of guy that like loves it.
It's not because of that. It's because of what Aaron Rodgers has become as such an enigma.
Ooh.
It like right idea, wrong angle.
Wrong angle, yeah.
It's not Tomlin. It's Rodgers.
Yeah.
That's where people will cheer for their downfall, because Rodgers has become such a hateable figure.
That all of a sudden, he doesn't pull the Manning and Brady.
And
he instead goes to the Jets, tire fire, goes to the Steelers, tire fire, retires.
It's also, of course, Aaron Rodgers is the one that ruins your winning
totally
record streak.
Yeah, he would. He would get that.
That's where it comes from. And like I said, I think you're right. It's just a different angle. It's Aaron Rodgers. I don't think enough people care about Mike Tomlin that they're going to prey on his downfall.
Yeah, they're going to
most fans will be like, no, you stay mediocre, okay?
We'll let the Steelers just keep – you keep spinning your tires, okay?
Because that's the thing. I don't actually think people want the Steelers to win, like, two games.
No.
No one wants them to, no like, one wants luck them to in – not dreadful. Luck into, but, like, all of a sudden just get their next all-time quarterback and they're back up in 2 years.
Teams are perfectly happy with Pittsburgh's complacency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fans of other teams, absolutely thrilled that Pittsburgh is just going to keep themselves happily treading water as the 6 or 7 seed every year and – none of it matters. They're just irrelevant in the sports right. landscape, ultimately. It's never stop your opponent from making a mistake. And even if the Steelers win two games, that's not a mistake anymore. That's you get to reset.
Yeah. It's because even if you keep Tomlin, what's the big thing with Tomlin? We all kind of wonder, like, what would he be without a head case for a quarterback? Because even Roethlisberger, as good as he was,
yeah.
The team didn't want him doing – his teammates didn't want him doing radio shows, and he basically, you know, metaphorically and maybe even literally flipped on the bird and kept doing it.
Yes, and throwing teammates under the bus while doing it. Yeah. Continuously so.
So you wonder if they all of a sudden – again, 2-3 wins. You're near the number one overall pick, and they do get a guy like a Drew Aller, Pennsylvania guy. I think the Steelers would love that to get a Penn State quarterback, even though I know Pitt and Penn have a rivalry, but Pennsylvania guy. Cade Klubnik out of Clemson. I've mentioned both those names today. If they got those guys – there's all of a sudden the feeling of like, oh man, Tomlin's got a guy that actually has like elite traits. Because when they drafted Kenny Pickett, he didn't have any of these. He had none traits. Of it.
As a matter of fact, he had a detrimental one.
Yeah.
Small hands.
He just had a great last college season after, you know, starting for 4 years. You would hope he would put together a good year.
Yeah, the way that people would prey on the downfall is because of Aaron Rodgers. Like if they win two games with Rodgers as a starting quarterback, good Lord, his legacy is, I wouldn't say fully tarnished, but man, that is a ugly mark at the end of it.
And that's the thing is, it's always tough to think back on a guy fondly if the end is so bad. Now, sports, it's a little bit easier because we all remember the prime years. Aaron Rodgers is still won multiple MVPs, has a Super Bowl, was, I argue, better than Brett Favre in Green Bay. But the last few years have been such a, it almost feels like a switch in his personality.
It's such like, aggressively.
Favre was always Favre. And if you ever watched that documentary on him on Netflix, funny enough too, like even radio hosts and people in Green Bay mentioned like, we loved him because we won. But like there was always like the warning signs.
Right.
Rodgers, it doesn't totally feel like that. It just always feels like he was a little bit more prickly and it maybe a little more
the
difficult
to
work
with. The
warning
signs happened in the early 2010s when his brother said, yeah, we don't talk to him
yeah,
anymore.
But like that was the warning sign.
That was the
like,
warning sign and we ignored it.
Yeah. But he wasn't like a quote-unquote, like I can't even say now he's a bad guy. He's just annoying.
That's the thing is that it's annoying and it is.
Like Favre, I think, is just based off all the reports, I'm not. Mm-hmm. He seems to be a bad guy.
Oh, really?
Rodgers, I think, is just annoying.
I was going to say, the guy with the welfare issue in Mississippi is a bad guy.
Yeah, potentially.
Saber's Live's coming up next.
Right, like but more at 11.
Yeah, but Rodgers. It seemed like he was this mellow personality at
California
first. California cool, hosting Jeopardy every now and then, you know, like a little bit of an intellectual, but not in an annoying way. And then 2020 happened.
And like kind of since, it's been, he's tough to deal with. It also sounds like no one wants him to do the Pat McAfee show anymore, but Roethlisberger keeps doing it.
But also, him even saying, and at least Roethlisberger didn't, like, to his credit, he didn't say this part of, like, we need to be, able to avoid the distractions. Bro, you are the distraction.
Yeah, you're the distraction.
Roethlisberger never necessarily said that in those words. He did say something else that was, like, a bad taste in the mouth, which was, like, you know, the young guys need to follow me. Bro, you were a problem the minute you got drafted. So
yeah, like, his early years, he had a lot of off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, and it wasn't
– a lot of off-the-field stuff.
Like also just like around Pittsburgh, how he mistreated like serving staff, anything like that. There were plenty of reports about that. And like, but Rodgers, it is, you came on aggressively with your annoying portion of your personality and this aggressive switch that everyone wants you to fail.
Yeah.
To a point where like, yeah, please stop going on McAfee. No. Okay.
Like fine. But yeah, like, I mean like, and this
for the Jets to tell you enough's enough.
Yeah.
That's just saying more about you than the Jets.
But it is wild, though. You look at his career accolades. You remember that first Jets season. There was so much hype there. And I, at the time, was frustrated by it, but I could totally understand it. Because you saw when Manning went to the Broncos, when Brady went to the Bucs, damn it, it still worked. They're still awesome. Like the quarterback position, especially now, I always go back to that old Ray Lewis quote when he was talking about, you know, as an NFL player, just when you've totally figured it out mentally, the game has just slowed to a standstill for you. When you can do it, your body gives up on you. You've hit that point. You're 35, yes. 36, your body gives up on you. That's not the same for quarterbacks. Now you're actually playing better as you get older, as long as your body didn't fall apart due to injuries, because everything has slowed down for you. And where Manning and Brady still put up great seasons, won a Super Bowl each for their new teams. You know, Manning had an all-time season, 55 touchdowns, 10 picks. Brady's still throwing for 5,000 yards. He actually retires before it even hits, you know, rock bottom. Rodgers instead blows out his Achilles, and then the next year it's a disaster. He gets a bunch of coaches fired, and the Jets have to entirely start over.
But even then, it was something that was also ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last thing I'll say about this, but Rodgers, in his last season in Green Bay, it falls off for him.
It does. It does.
Because the 3 years prior to 2022, he has a combined 11 interceptions.
Very Rodgers-esque, yep.
He has 12
in
22.
Now, to be fair, for some of the other, Brady and Manning, it also made sense why they left. Manning with a neck injury.
He's under 4,000 for the full season. And you're starting to see, like, oh, there's actually holes in your game. It was conveniently ignored because, oh my God, New York City, Jets. And then they ignored it again, coming back from the Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, guys, maybe we should start looking at things when they're starting to happen.
Yeah. Quick timeout here. We do have some news in the NFC South. We'll get to as we wrap up the show coming up after a quick timeout. This is WGR. Quick final segment here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. Some news in the NFC South. We'll start with the injury news. All-pro left tackle for the Bucks, Tristan Wirfs, is going to miss the start of the season. He is having knee surgery, right knee surgery. Mm. And so that could be real tough for them. He is one of the best tackles, has been since he entered the league. He is easily their best offensive lineman. And you look at potentially what could be the first four games if he goes on the PUP list to start, which is what he would miss, at Atlanta, at Houston, and the Jets in Philadelphia.
I mean, one of those is a big fear. Tampa's not like this great team either,
That's
though.
My thing is I'm like, oof, they're missing Wirfs. Does Atlanta all of a sudden get you?
They spent
big money on their pass rush in the draft.
If you can scrape by 2-2 without them,
you're feeling pretty good.
You're feeling pretty good at that point. And like Tampa is a good enough team to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They've
also got an early bye week 9.
Ready? Even with Wirfs in the lineup, I could see Tampa going 2-2.
100%. 100%.
So,
but it feels more likely, even 1-3 feels more likely.
I dunk on the Steelers about how they stay in like mediocrity, but like Tampa's not that far off of that, so to say. I think Baker is a good quarterback, not going to be one that rises you to the upper echelon of a conference.
Mm-hmm.
Is it good enough to keep winning the NFC South in its current state? Absolutely.
But in a few years? Maybe not, although they do keep getting Baker Mayfield weapons to make sure that time maybe never comes. Because I think Baker Mayfield can be a very good, if not almost elite quarterback, if you have him with a ton of weapons. But if those go away, I love him, but he is not giving me the vibe he can elevate.
He needs top-tier weapons to stay at the top of his game,
mm-hmm.
and Tampa at least recognizes it.
And then another team in the NFC South, the Saints, who are expected to have a terrible year this year, well, at least they're going to maybe look good doing it. They unveiled a new alternative helmet, and I put it up on my Twitter, just straight up, hell yeah. I love the all-white helmet, and it's the white helmet, the gold fleur-de-lis, they've got gold face masks.
It's clean.
Unbelievable. And Murphy he goes, already a top-five helmet in the league behind the Vikings throwback helmet. Can totally get behind that. Bucks creamsicle helmet, bring that back full-time. Bills primary, I think that's right with the white actual helmet and the white face mask, and then the Lions alternate. I think it's the black helmet with the blue lion.
Considering that the Commanders and the Saints have released alternate uniforms now.
Commanders did as well, yes.
Will we start seeing the NFL rivalries uniforms soon?
Oh, there we go. That's going to do it for me and Derek. We'll be back on tomorrow, 10 to 12, another edition of the Extra Point Show. But coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.